Robert McFarlane, thanks for being here.
Good to see you.
We go back a long way, a long, long way. Reagan administration. You were National Security Advisor.
That was enough at a time when the Cold War was at its peak and lots of challenges, but now we got a different kind of challenge, as you know better than I, with energy and a cartel still operating, and yet it seems like that cartel's kind of been thrown off course by what's going on here in our country.
That's right. Can you imagine the United States peaked on oil in 1970, 10 million barrels a day, then declined 4 million barrels a day, believed that we were going to be dependent on Mideast oil, someplace in there. It would be the natural assumption. And then we found what horizontal drilling was the key. We knew about fracking. You know, you won't believe this, but I saw my first frack job 1 year out of college in 1952. And you know, people today act like fracking is a new idea. No, it's been around a long time. Now we brought our production back up to 9.4 million barrels a day. And that screwed up this oil price is what happened.
Tell me, people have gotten used to expecting that this OPEC cartel can set the price of oil forever. And about a year ago, as the U.S. ramped up production, an extra 4 or 5 million barrels a day, it kind of disproved that notion that a cartel would be forever able to set the price. And what I was wondering in my question is, will the American production go down? Or will the depletion of those wells mean that we go back to OPEC calling the tune?
Well, it's kind of interesting. We ran up our production. We oversupplied the market. The United States did. And then a year ago, it really started last June, the decline started. And you cut the price of oil from $100 to $50, about what it amounted. So you cut it in half. But the Saudis very quickly said they would produce at their same level. Well, actually, their level I always feel like it's about 9.6. They went up to 10.6, which I never believed they could do. So I learned something there. And they said they can go to 12.5. I don't believe that. So they just went on producing. They said they're going to maintain their part of the market. And you and me and the United States, you cut. You be the swing producer.
You know, I was wondering, they say that what motivates Saudis is maintaining their market share, and that kind of makes sense.
Sure.
I think there's another reason, too. The Iranians need about $140 a barrel to balance their budget. So with Iran being kind of an adversary, you can see where Saudi probably likes low price for a while at least, because it really hurts Iran a lot. Is that right?
Yeah, for a while.
Right.
I said today that if the price of oil is no higher than $60 a barrel by the end of this year, the Saudis have got to be getting tired of it too. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see if that prediction plays out, because I think they'll cut, because they've got not just the Iranians, they're causing them a lot of pain, but they've got other countries that don't like it either. So it's not, if it was just the Iranians, I think they'd go ahead and continue to produce at their rate and the price is low. Mm-hmm. So, but here we are with, there have been five of these dips in price of oil since 1980. Now you remember all that. I'm there every day on this job. You got 10 other jobs, and you know, if you thought back, you could come up with the same thing I have. But there have been five of them. Four of them, the Saudis dropped drop production to stabilize price. Mm-hmm. This one, they said, no, you cut production. So now there's a little more to it than just making it painful for the Iranians with lower prices. Us too. I think they wanted to shut down the shale drilling if they could.
Well, that makes sense. Tell me, I just ran across a kind of an unintended consequence of this contest the U.S. has been having with Iran. We've imposed sanctions and they've been working. It has led the Iranians to do a kind of a interesting thing. First of all, they've kind of snuggled up to China. China wants a way to run all those automobiles they're producing, 20 million of them. And they don't have much oil or gas. But they've gone to Iran, and Iran has just completed the largest methanol plant in the world. And it kind of makes sense because, as you know, natural gas is how you make methanol.
Sure. And they all work for transportation fuel.
That's right.
Yeah.
So Iran has, what, the second most natural gas in the world? If they start turning that into methanol or just natural gas, they could become a transportation fuel supplier for the world, couldn't they?
Sure. You know, we have more natural gas than Iran does.
They do now, thanks to you and what's been going on in the industry.
It's unbelievable how much natural gas we have. And we have no energy plan in America. No. But we should try to use our very cheap natural gas, and we're getting ready to start exporting it. That's fine with me. But you should develop markets in America to take advantage of the cheap natural gas instead of shipping it out of the country.
How's that coming along, the natural gas highway? Have you begun to get enough stops along the interstates to where trucking fleets can really go from Maine to California?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's done. That's on the interstates now. They have over 100 LNG stations on the interstate. The natural gas highway is in place, but the drop in the price of oil, diesel, has slowed down the trucks going to natural gas. But it's happening. It's growing by about 30% a year. But you started from such a low base, it's slow going to get there. But you've got BNSF now running tests. I think they're running four different tests, four different locomotives that they have. But you've got the CNR, Canadian National Railroad, that has gone to natural gas. And so if the railroad goes to it, it puts a lot of pressure on the truckers because they compete. Everything's set to go. You haven't had the leadership in Washington because they don't understand it. Okay, what is the leadership? You can't just say this is a good idea. To date, the president spends a great amount of time talking about climate change. And natural gas is cleaner than diesel. Climate change is, those are the emissions that are affecting the climate. And it doesn't, I don't know whether they don't put it together, but you got 8 million 18-wheelers. If they went to natural gas, you'd be talking about 3 million barrels a day.
You know, it's astonishing how far off track we've gotten in not only energy policy, national security. My goodness, the president gave a speech in West Point not long ago, and he said the biggest challenge facing your generation, you cadets, is climate change. Well, come on. Natural gas is cleaner, cheaper, and as you've said, it's ours. And it doesn't require you go and fight a war every 5 or 6 years. Even Washington ought to be able to learn that.
But can you imagine him talking there, speaking at West Point? And he is trimming the services down faster than they've ever been, maybe after World War II. But in peacetime, we're not in peacetime. We're at war right now. But trimming the services down. He is doing that, isn't he?
He is. He's already got the Army down by 50,000 soldiers. The Marines are down about a little more than 10-15%. And you just can't do that and expect to maintain your ability to maintain peace in the world. And you can't go around ignoring people that have been on your side. This deal with Iran, looks to me it's shot full of holes, that there's no way to verify it, that we're just giving them about $150 billion overnight. As you know, they've got inventory that they've been storing up. What do you reckon? They're going to put 2.5, maybe up to 4 million barrels on the market before long?
They can't. That won't happen, Robert, because one, when you're shut down for a period of time, your production, I mean, you've got to do remedial work, you've got to do some drilling, and well shut in, or you come back on, if you've been producing water, you produce more water, is what will happen. So I want to see that production, and they haven't had money to work on those wells. I think when they come on, when do you think they'll start producing?
They'll be getting that money within about 6 months, so I guess it's at least a year before they start.
That's exact. June of next year is what we think they'll start, June, July, sometime next year, mid next year. When they say they're going to be up 1 million barrels, I would say closer to 200,000. And then they'll have to build it up, and they'll have to work on the production to have that happen. Look at the total supply globally, 93 million barrels a day. Okay, take out OPEC and the United States. The United States, 9, OPEC, 32. So there's about 40 there. Iraq, I don't think that Saudis can increase over 10-6. So you've got Iraq there, you got the United States that can add to that 40 million. Then you take the other 50 million off, there isn't anybody in that 50 million that's replacing reserves. So that 50 million is, they are having to deal with a decline curve. Okay, that's about 5% a year, 5 or 6% a year. So whatever the Iranians bring into the market, there's going to be a home for it, I believe.
Well, you're right. In Nigeria and Venezuela, these are not exactly the most stable countries in the world. So,
and they got to have more for their oil price. Mm-hmm. They got to be writing some nasty notes to the Saudis.
Tell me, I noticed also in the last few years that China, which of course doesn't have much oil or gas.
Well, but they're second to the United States on as a consumer.
Right.
Yeah, we're 18 million barrels a day, and China is 10. Well, they're closer to 11 now.
So they need to find some.
Well, they're producing half of theirs.
But if they're making 20 million cars a year now, and they go looking, as they have been looking, for wherever they can find other reserves.
But go back and look at the deals they made. They made deals with the Iranians, Venezuela, Brazil. They have made some deals. And I've never been able to get details off those deals. But I think they loaned Brazil $40 billion. Okay, now you're going to pay them back with oil. Going to pay China back with oil. If those deals were made and the price of oil, this was several years ago, the price of oil was, say, $30 a barrel. Okay, do you think they're going to let Brazil pay them back with $100 oil?
I don't think so.
No, they're going to pay back what the oil is going to be, the price it was the day we made the loan to you. They've got the same kind of loans with Venezuela. And I asked people, I said, are they paying back with $30, $40, $80, $100? What are they paying those loans back? Nobody knows. I can never get anybody to even speculate as to what price they're paying those back.
Well, the Chinese are resourceful people, and They pledged $100 billion to Iran over the next 10 years. And I don't know whether that's for oil. It looks like it could be for natural gas as methanol. The largest methanol plant in the world has just been completed in Iran, and it works in an automobile. China is making methanol out of coal, which is not very good thing to do.
It'll work, but it's...
Yeah, it's dirty and it's expensive. Could methanol become a competing fuel in the market, do you think?
If you're going to be competitive, it'll be price. Mm-hmm. I'm not an expert on methanol, but sure, I think that we know that, and methanol is cleaner than diesel is. Mm-hmm. Let me go over to another point, or I'm going to forget it. We went to war in Iraq. We said we didn't go for oil. I believe that. We go, we lose 7,000 people, spend $1 trillion, and have 30,000 injured. That's the saddest thing in the world on television, see wounded warriors. That just breaks my heart, because we went to Iraq, we're out of Iraq, and they're worse off than when we showed up. So we didn't get much for our money and our people. But guess who gets the oil out of Iraq? China.
China and Russia, but China.
Yeah, China. I think, and it's incredible to me that we're not going for oil, and China just sits there quietly. They don't put up any money, they don't lose any people, and they get the oil.
Plus, we thought we were going to end up with Iraq being a stable country, practicing democracy. Well, that really isn't what happened, is it?
No, you found out that to control those people, their culture and all, you have to have people like Saddam Hussein, Gaddafi, and the rest of those guys like that. They know how to control the people. Yeah. You can't turn them loose and say have a democracy. That's out.
No, there was probably a way by doing essentially what we did in Korea after the Korean War, by leaving enough Americans to train them to be able to build their country and grow. But we didn't do that. We pulled the plug. But let me ask you another question. Here at home, it is exciting to see us making a lot of oil and gas. When do you think we're going to begin to export natural gas?
It starts in the first quarter of 16. Mm-hmm. That'll be the Cheniere plant at Lake Charles, Louisiana. And they'll export 1 billion cubic feet of gas a day. Not very much. And there have been permits, a number of permits given to export natural gas. And we should export oil too. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot better chance of exporting oil and natural gas, of stabilizing a market, than anybody else does.
Mm-hmm. It looks like Russia is trying to establish its share of the Chinese market in natural gas with these two fairly large deals they've done in the last year or so. And they've set a price at about $10 per million, or MCF. Do you think LNG from our country can compete after you add in the shipping cost at $10 an M?
It won't be a big profit. Mm-hmm. And consequently, I think what's going to happen is we're moving in the United States pretty fast, but it's too slow, is to get over to natural gas. We have coal, has this administration is just killing the coal people. But what happens, natural gas gets to pick up power generation market off of coal. So coal's down now to about 32%. They were at one time almost a half. And natural gas has gone up. I think what you'll see, and plastics from natural gas are cheap, and you've got the people that are in the fertilizer business. They love cheap natural gas. And so what do you have to work with? You have the cheapest energy in the world in America. Oil cheaper by 10%, natural gas cheaper by 75%, and gasoline half the price of the rest of the world. So what has been created in the United States, unbelievable opportunity, because I believe that the cost of energy will trump cheap labor. And so we have, if we could just get some leadership, that if you guys could get back in and you could bring President Reagan with you, you need him for sure. It's unbelievable what could happen to this country.
Well, you've been generous. I think you're right. But the industry is also getting better and better and better. Automotive industry is getting better. You were telling me that this new Cummins engine is so much more efficient. Tell me, when you put it all together, to drive a 18-wheeler, in terms of cost per mile, would you guess that it's, what, one-fifth the cost of diesel or one-fourth?
Well, diesel's come down, you know. But I would say that when I have talked, and Dean Foods is on natural gas. When I talked to Pete Schenkel about it, I said, Pete, y'all are using about 100 million gallons of fuel a year. I can show you how you can save $100 million. So the dollar a gallon is what we were talking about at that time. One-fifth is too cheap. But because you're going to pay more to get on natural gas, it's going to cost you $30,000 on those 18-wheelers. So you're going to have to get that back. But those trucks are running 30,000 gallons a year. So if it's 30,000, you're saving a dollar, you pay it out in a year, is what it is.
That's pretty quick payback.
Good payback, yeah.
Well, it's a brighter future in our country if we can stay out of war and get new leadership. Looks like a pretty brighter future.
Stay out of war. I think we're in war forever.
Well, it is going to take a long time to overcome what we have seen emerge in Iraq and 50 other countries of the world, this radical Islamic push that we've got to get better at this.
Robert, you're a Marine, weren't you, Marine?
Right.
What a different approach and what a different enemy that we fight today and you fought when you were in the service. Mm-hmm. But what you had, you still got the same rifle, the same bullet in it. But these guys they're like cockroaches. They're everywhere. You used to find where you went into battle. These guys, I mean, you know, they talk about lone wolf people. Strange, strange deal, but very scary too.
Well, it is. And the way that our immigration laws and our open borders exist, the problem is going to get worse before it gets better, but I believe it can get better if we begin to awaken Americans to the nature of the problem of this misguided ideology that's being taught in mosques throughout our country. This isn't to say that every Muslim is a bad Muslim, but that is a point. Get the ones who are sensible to start standing up and correcting the schools, their mosques.
Yeah, but we haven't seen that.
Haven't seen it yet.
No. You and I could talk for hours. And if we got back into history and what we've seen and what we've done together and over the years, we could spend a week or two. I appreciate your time, and I know our audience does too. But Robert McFarland, a true American patriot. Thanks.
Look forward to seeing you again.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.